Hey guys, it's Liz Kelly. We have another live show coming up on Monday, November 12th at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas. Ryan Russillo and The Ringer's Kevin Clark and Robert Mays are doing a live dual threat Ringer NFL show crossover. They'll be breaking down week 10 of the NFL and covering the major storylines from around the league. For more info and links to tickets, check out The Ringer's Twitter and Instagram.
What's going on, jabronis? It's pitch Mr. Perfect, Skylar Astin.
Hey, this is Bruce Pritchard.
Bruce Battle Season 1 champion, Mike Long.
The king of sad stop.
The Silver Lake heartthrob.
It's Trey Kirby.
It's Nick Mundy.
This is your real WWE superstar, the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
Hey, this is WWE superstar, Braun Strowman.
My name's Kevin Owens.
I am Shinsuke Nakamura.
Zach Linder.
Dan Black, a.k.a. the Goof Haraja.
I'm AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, if you will, and you're listening.
You're listening to the Masked Man Show.
Welcome to the Masked Man Show. I'm your host, David Shoemaker. And today, on this very special episode of the Masked Man Show, we are going full mailbag. Or full Russillo. What should we call it? Where it's just me talking and my heel producer, Jim, is occasionally talking.
Cream of the crop.
You are, man. It's a big week this week. We just got off Crown Jewel, which was incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
Big time house show pay-per-view. We really need a word for these things. Are there any questions about Crown Jewel so we can just go full, we can actually go? We solicited questions from you guys. Mm-hmm. And this is what this is all I'm going to do. I'm just going to answer your questions this week.
Yeah. A lot of people asked what you thought of Hogan's return. I think we should start with that.
Oh, sheesh. I know that like no one really cares when I talk about or when anybody talks about their things they didn't write. I was in a process of writing a piece last week about Evolution leading into Crown Jewel thought I kind of had the right tone, threaded that needle sort of in a way that I was happy with. And then they announced that Hogan was coming back and then that Hogan was hosting the show, which I don't know if there's a significant difference between the two, although I don't know, you know, it's just a bangle or whatever. But I just lost all of the steam I had to write. I think that if the idea was that who knows? There's a lot of people have a lot of ideas. A lot of theories about this. If the idea was that they were already getting so much shit for that show, they might as well bring Hogan back. I don't think that was it. But if that was the idea, it sounded dumb. It actually was kind of successful in a way because I was just so exhausted by the existence of Crown Jewel by the time that Hogan got out there that I found it hard to muster a whole lot of righteous indignation right then. But if it's, you know, what I think the more likely scenario is, which was like John Cena decided not to go and they had to replace him, his star power, with somebody. And so they relented and put Hogan onto the card. In a formal way, who knows? I mean, honestly, there might be other people might have explained why it happened, but if that's why it happened, then, you know, okay. I mean, that's just part and parcel with this entire very, very questionable, unconscionable decision to be holding this show in the first place. So
I have two questions about this.
Yeah.
One, do we know how much they were paid for this?
No, I was just saying this the other day. There have been reports, but like you see numbers that I honestly can't tell if it's a joke or not. Like I can't, like if someone will be like, oh, WWE's getting $800 million. Like I'm just like, I don't know if that's the actual reported number, if that's just like the biggest number someone could think of. They're getting a ton of money.
I mean, $800 million. What would you guess? Gun to your head.
Well, whatever the number was, it was spread out over like 10 years or like, you know, so that could very feasibly.
Oh, is this going to be a yearly
or twice a year thing? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They're going to keep doing a lot.
Okay. My other question is, how do you think that conversation went between Vince and the Hulkster?
I have no idea. There's nothing that would surprise me about the situation. It would definitely not surprise me if Hogan was just there anyway. If they had like secretly brought Hogan along because the Crown Prince had requested his presence, but they were determined not to put him on the air, then they had to put him on the air. That wouldn't surprise me. And this is not based on any inside information. And if they were just like, if it was just a last minute call and Vince was like, Hogan, are you busy this weekend? Hey, Terry, are you busy this weekend? And Terry was like, what do you think? I have a very open dance card right now. Regardless.
Spending the weekend in a tanning machine or whatever, tanning bed. Yeah.
I mean, listen, we can sit around and talk about the morality of any of all of this, but particularly of Hulk Hogan's return. I mean, it feels kind of gross. But at the end of the day, I'm kind of.
Did Bubba the Love Sponge tweet anything about this?
I think he has a legal order preventing him from doing so. We'll see if he has any takes on this.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about Crown Jewel, and especially it's, I guess, when Hogan came out at the beginning, insane amount of fireworks.
It wasn't really even the beginning, was it? Or was I just watching the pre-show and not noticing when the show started?
I'm not totally sure, but either way. The fireworks. Yeah, there was
a lot of people pointed out the sort of return of pyro.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So WWE doesn't do pyro anymore, right? Is that a legal thing or just money? Just a waste of money.
It was. I think they put it over as a waste of money when it went at the time that it happened.
Okay. Do they do it at
and
the
also,
big show?
Like, I've never been a big fireworks guy. So I was not like I was sort of happy when it happened.
Yeah.
Although there's certain entrances. That rely on it, sure.
Right.
Although, man, if you go to any live show, I don't care where you're sitting. There's nothing like those fireworks are not fun.
It's not. It's too loud, right?
It's really, really loud, especially for little kids. You know, I mean, it's like every kid in there is just scared out of their mind. And that's, I guess, if that's the point with Kane, that's fine. But if it's like, you know, Rey Mysterio's coming to the ring and every kid is screaming and hiding under their chair, I don't think that's very helpful for anybody. So.
Every kid and you.
Yeah, I can't fit under the chair anymore. But
get out of my way,
screaming.
Kids.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's part of me that's like, it's cool to see the pyro back for a super big event. If they wanted to do it for WrestleMania or something, that would be fine. But it's weird because, like I said, it has more to do with the ring pack, like the entrance packages, right? It has to do with like, what that feeling at that specific moment for a specific wrestler,
like when Shawn Michaels does the pose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Batista or whatever, like, you know, I mean, that's like with the like machine gun pyro. That's like part of his deal. So
right,
Goldberg, we actually get obviously.
Goldberg, of course. Does he still have the pyro when he was when he came back?
Yeah, I think they still had it going when he was there.
Yeah.
That'd be great if they just did it with like confetti instead. Just found some like just
yeah, CGI, just, had some just graphics yeah, over him.
Just no, I just want like stagehands in black throwing like pixie dust on him when he's out there posing. That'd be really great.
There was a question about entrances. Who was your favorite? What tag team had the best finisher and the best entrance?
I'm going back to the last thing. Did we talk on the show about when was it? Oh, it was when The Miz, I forgot what WrestleMania, but when The Miz had the giant inflatable I'm Awesome logo on the stage for his big WrestleMania entrance, and they actually had like stagehands in like all black, in like the black leotard, head covered everything that were controlling the whole thing. It was pretty awesome.
That's funny.
Anyway, maybe that's just the new look, so you don't realize that like the stagehands are like NXT superstars. Anyway, what was the entrance question?
Oh, sorry. So the question is, which tag team had the best entrance and finishing move overall? I know my choice.
Are we talking about in the main event of the Crown Jewel?
No, just ever.
Oh,
I believe. But since we're talking about entrances, I figured hit that one.
I was really excited. I thought we were going to talk about that Crown Jewel main event. Hopefully we'll come back to that because it definitely was not Degeneration X looking like the Harris twins. who had the best entrance? I mean, there's a reason why they call it the Road Warriors pop when those guys came out.
I was
going to
say, exactly, yeah.
But that wasn't even, I mean, it wasn't like choreographed or anything. It was just like those dudes came out, like their music hit, depending on you always knew who it was them, even though their music changed,
Roar with Hawk.
That was the WWE or WWF look. Yeah.
What did they used to come out to? I Am Iron Man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like they had some a different one. We can look
a
it
couple
up.
Different
like,
ones. Yeah.
Yeah. But they were one of the early. They certainly did not invent. No one says that they invented like having theme music, but they were one of like the popularizers of it.
Right. While you're looking that up, The Rockers was always fun. They came running down. Their theme song was very much like.
I loved that.
Yeah. It was, their song sounded like the Ultimate Warrior song, and they came running down, high-fiving everybody. Who else? I wasn't really watching back then.
The Killer Bees?
No, I don't remember what they did. They
I'm
ran?
Just kidding.
Oh. Paul London and who? Brian Kendrick? Did they run and like dive and slide into the ring somehow? Like choreograph?
Yes. Is this just from your memory? What is it?
It's from like a random YouTube video I saw once. But I remember being impressed with something they did.
Yeah, I mean, there've got to be some like all-time. I don't even know what they would be.
Yeah, and then what about what's your favorite tag team finisher?
Man, that's really hard. I really like the heart attack. I mean,
I don't know. It's kind of weak.
No, but there's just such a simplicity to it. I'm not talking about
and it's fun.
Pain. I mean, the Rockers were like two fists, you know? I mean,
off the top rope, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, I think the Doomsday Device. I mean, that's the best one. The backflip.
Yeah. I mean, all of those, anything where you work together as a team, the 3D.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. That's a good call. They had great entrances, too. Just cursing out the crowd in ECW.
Oh, my gosh. They were fantastic. I mean, they were that was a real tag team, you know.
Yeah, they were great. Are you still looking up the Road Warriors music?
No. It was definitely Iron Man. I thought that they came out to something else in the South, but it doesn't say. I mean, I can't find any proof of that.
Okay, you want to go back to Crown Jewel? Up next, a big takeaway from that was Shane's win in the tournament.
Whew. I turned the show off after Shane's win because it felt like such the WWE. No, not in defiance. I just absentmindedly thought the show was over. I think I must have paused it and like went to get a coffee and then came back and just stupidly thought I had seen the whole show.
Was that before or after Brock and Braun?
It was after.
Oh, okay. So what do you think of Shane winning? Do you think they just did that? Because it didn't mean anything in Saudi Arabia?
No. I think it had absolutely nothing to do with Saudi Arabia. I thought it was actually really ballsy. I mean, I thought it was dumb, but it actually had more to do with the rest of WWE. It was like a bald-faced setup for Survivor Series. And just like the kind of turf warfare of like Shane versus Raw, SmackDown versus Raw. I mean, I thought it was whatever. I mean, maybe Shane counts as a star that the Crown Prince wanted to see wrestle. Maybe, you know, that he fit in there for that reason. And that was a kind of a fun match and a fun way to include him. But man, that was very strange. Like even in the world, even in kayfabe, why your general manager or commissioner or whatever the hell could just be like, I'm going in. It's not just a match. It was like, it was a tournament. Like you had to win your way in. And there's like a really obvious way. Like there's lots of wrestling and general sports history that explain that, you know, that can give you some guidance here. If there's like a bracket and somebody can't go on, then generally the person that they beat gets to wrestle in their place.
Exactly. Like the old UFC and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they used to do the tournaments back in the day.
I guess that would have been, I mean, that's, you know, put Rey Mysterio in there or whatever, or just like have some different system, but, or have Dolph win. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Or just throw Shane in there.
Or just throw Shane in there.
The boss's son.
It's funny, man. Shane is just so much bigger than everybody now. You know, it's hard for him to look like a little, I mean, like a
How
unlikely,
tall is Shane?
I don't, I mean, he's a full-sized guy. He's like 6'1", 6'2", something like that.
Grown-ass man is what the kids say.
Yeah, he is a grown-ass man. It is just like endlessly entertaining, though, that he's so tall and just jacked, like more jacked than most of the wrestlers on the roster. Sporting the full head of gray hair is a good touch. I mean, there's nobody like him. He's really, I mean, I'm not even joking around, but he's just like such a, he's just like so incongruous in so many ways. But, you know, he's fun. It's fun to have him around. I hope that eventually he turns heel, because otherwise this has been the biggest long-term storytelling tease of all time for him just to be just sort of a jackass, but not really like meaningful in any way. But we're about at the 1 year anniversary of him just being like a bad person. And he continues to do that by like stealing, like, you know, he was like preening with the trophy on SmackDown and obviously celebrating with it at Crown Jewel. I mean, if there's something that's sort of funny about it, but I think that the problem, I mean, the underlying problem is that we're all just jaded wrestling fans. And when you see that, you feel like that's just a McMahon giving himself a pat on the back, you know,
right.
instead of it actually being a storytelling tool.
Right.
But whatever. Logically that was dumb, but you know, I wasn't also logically was, I mean, yeah. I mean, also it was, I mean, there was a lot of like illogic in that, but yeah, I mean, it also was kind of unfair to, I mean, I know the Miz didn't get fired, but there was that weird thing hanging out there that like Shane was going to fire whoever went to the finals if they lost. Even though that person had won like two matches to get there, which seemed a little bit unfair. Like if the Miz were to get fired, you would think that like Hardy and Mysterio should just like necessarily be fired too for not getting there instead of him. I don't know. Anyway, a lot of illogic in that one. But if it's somehow leading to Shane being, you know, some sort of villainous on screen persona, I guess it's all, you know,
gravy.
It's all gravy. I will say that people were really mad about this one online when it happened, and I get it. I've been there. I've, you know, had those moments, and this was a shockingly weird, just like, I didn't tweet or anything, but I think I was like on a group chat, and my only contribution to the whole thing was just like, I think I typed like, well, fuck, when this happened, because I couldn't believe it. It was just sort of like just stunning, but you know, it was a silly tournament for a fake thing. And if you're not going to give the best in the world trophy to like Daniel Bryan, then it might as well be won by somebody who makes a mockery of the whole premise, because that was sort of inherent in the whole thing.
Right.
The end.
Speaking of the boss's son, someone tweeted a question. What happens when Vinnie Mac passes?
Oh, crap. I mean, I think right now, I mean, as far as anybody knows, that Stephanie and Shane take over. I think
split it 50-50?
No. I'm sorry. Did I say Stephanie and Shane? I mean, Stephanie and Triple H will take over.
You don't think Vince will leave it to his son? Who's older? Shane's older, right?
Yeah, but I haven't heard. I mean, obviously Shane has a lot of sway, but since he came back, I mean, it seems like he's from the beginning. He was content to be an on-screen character. And definitely, if he wanted, you know, I mean, he still owns, I think, a portion of the company. And I guess it would depend. I mean, if Vince just like unilaterally left a big chunk of his shares to Shane, that would change them. That would shake things up, or it would be a sort of real life superstar shakeup, if you will. But I think that, you know, Stephanie and Triple H are so insinuated into their roles now that it would be kind of, it's not just like, I mean, it would severely rock the company if their positions were altered in any significant way.
Right.
It would be a big problem. Mm-hmm. And I don't just mean like people would be upset. It's just like, you can't like fire the two most important executives in the company or two of the five most important executives in the company and just keep cruising as if everything's okay. But yeah, it would. I mean, I think that in the short term, if he, you know, stepped down or whatever, but that he would, if Vince stepped down, the company would keep going and we wouldn't notice a whole lot of change for a while. But I think that, you know, you can get a pretty good sense of the long term vision. You know, obviously from Triple H's side, it's in existence in NXT and NXT UK and now 205 Live and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, even in, we saw with Evolution, the sort of slightly off center stuff, probably mixed match challenge even. I mean, I think it more so than even just the Triple H vision. There's a lot of people, or there are some important voices in the company that don't have, that aren't, you know, pushing or aren't getting exactly what they would want right now. I think there's a lot of sort of new media stuff like mixed match challenge that we would see more of, or we would see kind of in more volume if there were, if Vince wasn't around. But who knows? Listen, everybody that has a complaint, everybody in the world that has a complaint about WWE, the, you know, wild thing is that there's somebody in that building with significant influence who agrees with you. And it's sort of, and there would be some sort of like power, you know, battle for power in the, you know, within the walls of Stanford, but it would be, I don't think there's going to be some sort of like palace intrigue where like Shane tries to depose Stephanie or anything like that. I think it's more like the sort of 2 through 5, you know, every wrestling fan is like, knows the names George Barrios and Michelle Wilson and people like that, and Kevin Dunn, obviously. But then there's just sort of the people after that. I mean, and I'm is like Road Dogg, a full office guy, you know, like 3 months later, is he like, you know, sitting in corporate meetings, you know, like with an executive title? Who knows? There's a lot of things that could shake up, and that's where the way the company looks sort of would change. I think that, I mean, that those are the things that would affect the company the most. So it's really hard to predict.
Right. Moving on to the match of the year, Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman.
Holy shit.
Luke Haglund asked, is WWE secretly brilliant for putting the title back on Brock?
I think right now, absolutely. I mean, like, it's sort of funny, like, Brock's next big thing, next career moment is going to, I mean, besides losing the WWE champion, the Universal title, if and when that happens, is going to be fighting Daniel Cormier in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because DC sort of has a very similar role to Brock Lesnar. Like, he's awesome and people love him, but he's mostly just kind of a steady hand. Like, he's a dependable figure for UFC, and he has been for a long time. He hasn't always been at the top of his weight class or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think Brock has, if nothing else, has proven to be a sort of, to, you know, a very functional source of stability, even though he doesn't show up all the time. And even though wrestling fans would like to see that title defended, whoever beats Brock is going to really be over. You know, it's a role that Roman never quite lived up to. But like, you know, if Seth Rollins takes the title from him at WrestleMania or before then at the Royal Rumble, that's going to be a huge moment for Seth Rollins. You know, if it's Drew McIntyre's star turn or whatever, the timing for this is all going to be really interesting, because there was something about him winning the title where I was like, I have to quit saying factoring in Lesnar's UFC career into his WWE career, because I'm fully convinced that either he can keep the title as long as he damn well pleases, regardless of whether or not he's working for UFC at the same time, and Vince is like convinced himself that that's a good PR move, or that he's not going to UFC, you know, he's got to his fight camp, and after a couple months was just like, nah, it's not going to happen.
When is his suspension up? Isn't he suspended from UFC?
I think he can go into, I think he's back in January, or he's into the testing protocol in January. I should know this as the UFC editor over here. But yeah, I mean, he would be fighting Cormier in the first quarter of 2019. How is 2018 almost over?
I know.
How is that possible?
It's absurd.
Anyway. But yeah, so I don't know that it has any reflection on it. But that said, I don't know how they would line those two things up, because whenever he fights DC, it'll be, if indeed that happens, I don't know how that doesn't conflict with WrestleMania. And I don't know how you can, I mean, regardless of the PR of having your guy, of having the WWE championship belt in the octagon, I don't know how you can send your champ in there with the possibility that he's just going to get knocked out in 5 seconds.
Do you think he would get knocked out in 5 seconds?
He,
I don't think so.
He's, he's literally twice as big as Daniel Cormier. Actually, I know. That's not true. They're gonna go in at about 10 pounds. Well, I guess walking around weight. Brock maybe might have 20 pounds on him or something when the match starts. But
is Cormier that much of a striker? Bigger. which is more wrestling.
Well, he's got a lot of knockout power. Brock has some a little bit of knockout power.
He's more
Brock's
wrestler.
Brock's more of like when he's laying just on top beast. Of you, his punches have a lot of weight behind him.
Right.
Yeah, Cormier, I mean, like, knocked out Stipe. I mean, no one thought, I thought Stipe had an iron jaw. He just got in there with this, like, little inside uppercut and just clocked him. I meant knocked out more metaphorically. I mean, I just don't know. There's a reason why they didn't put, you know.
Who would be favored
the world
in that
champion
fight?
into the brawl for all when they were doing that shit in WWF? You know, you just can't risk that. You just can't kayfabe with that shit.
Who would be favored in that fight, though, Cormier and Brock?
Cormier by a lot.
Oh, really?
A lot.
Wow.
I mean, I'm saying if you like Vegas odds, Brock might get some public money or something like that. But like,
yeah.
And so he might look like the favorite, but no, I mean, one of these guys has been training and competing in a professional, real fighting way for consistently. And Brock's last championship was years ago.
But what if Brock hits him with like 8 F5s, which is one move that doesn't look like it hurts at all, by the way.
I mean, listen, the one thing you can say about Lesnar is that he hasn't like put a lot of miles on his body since he was in UFC.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like he was out there working like, you know, working like 60 minute Broadways from like town to town all over the country, you know.
It's not doing anything.
Yeah, no, and anything can happen in that division. I mean, the heavyweight division operates by a very different set of rules. I mean, not literally, but just, you know, big old men. I mean, even Daniel Cormier is such a weird... I mean, it's kind of bizarre that he just found his spot there. It's not like he's not doing like a Randy Couture thing where he's like just old and grizzled and goes up in weight class because why the hell not? But he kind of is. I mean, it's... I do like the theory that somebody had. I forgot where I heard this, that like... That Cormier's body type is actually a huge asset because like you just no one knows how to grab onto him, you know, and he's just sort of this like giant
because they've never wrestled anyone that shape before.
Yeah, like, exactly. The shape is just unsettling. Anyway, I find it the whole point of that is to say I think that Lesnar is going to have to drop the belt, or it has to at least be in WWE's current plans that he will drop the belt at the Royal Rumble or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know. I mean, he wrestles so seldomly that I don't know what it'll be. Unless he fights Cormier in January or February,
both on
and
the
then
same
he, and
night.
Then he goes, yeah, that would be
Royal
awesome.
Rumble and Cormier in January, same night. Like Deion.
I mean,
Sanders.
The only unless they fight before WrestleMania and then. I mean, could you have DC come with like take the Universal title from him? Would that could you
be
have
amazing.
It be for both belts?
That's what he said.
And regardless, it would be. I mean, that's what he. I know he's threatened that.
Yeah.
But then you almost just have to have him roll over. I mean, the WrestleMania main event would draw a lot of eyes, but then it would be terrible. And even
exactly.
with, I don't know. It might. Anything's possible. That was my big takeaway. That and the thing where apparently Vince really hates Braun Strowman now.
Yeah. Well, before that, real quick, though, I do have to ask, what do you think hurts more, an F5 or a suplex?
Oh.
A suplex, right? An F5
well,
is not
if you
bad,
know how
man.
To if you know how to take it, even in kayfabe, if, like, the idea is that you would have taken this move before to practice it, right? Just like you would have sparred, mm-hmm. you know? I think it's easier to, like, you would be better at falling on your back. An F5, it's a little bit more awkward, and you have this sort of, it's not just gravity, it's also like the strength of Brock Lesnar bringing you down.
No, but it doesn't bring him down, he kind of tosses him. But what do you think
hurts more on
your body? Just like, your body's reaction, what would hurt more?
Yeah, probably a suplex.
That's ridiculous. Hilarious.
I think for any regular person.
Yeah.
I think for any regular person, the suplex hurts more, but I think you can make the case that with training, the F5 would hurt more.
Well, he could do, to a regular person, he'd F5 them out into like the fourth row or something.
I mean, Brock Lesnar would just push your face as hard as he could and you would die.
Oh, yeah, he could just like rip your arms off and beat you to death with them. Good times. Anyway, so speaking of which, as you mentioned with Braun, LB Samuels 51 asks, what does Braun have to do to get the title put on him other than strangling Vince until he agrees to it?
This is a really tough one because I was like sort of a like I'm the hugest Braun Strowman fan, but was also not fully on board with the, you know, strap a rocket to him argument when that was first happening. I thought that he had real limitations as a headliner, not as a main eventer, and that those would be, it's more of like it, like people would just sort of get tired of him if he were thrust into our faces all that much. And maybe that's silly because he's in our faces a lot anyway, but the flip side is they also seem to sort of miss the window with him. Part of that is just he's lost some steam. He's flipped. He got flipped heel just for the sake of having an enemy for the Shield, and then we just flipped him right back as soon as that was over. And now he's, you know, and then the Roman and we're just, Roman's absence just sort of deflates everything. You know, I used to say all the time that, you know, even for the people who hated John Cena in the peak of the Cena sucks days, he was really important for making, I mean, his most important role was making the guys you care about seem legitimate. Mm-hmm. And Roman had a lot of that, had a lot of that too. I mean, just kind of sneakily, even though he came along later, you always knew if Roman was in the ring with somebody, then you got the idea that WWE cared about that person. And, you know, his absence is significant. And there's just the sort of like emotional moral chasm that like, emotional chasm that comes with just like having to think about what he's going through every time there's a Universal title match now.
But why didn't they just slide Strowman into that Roman role?
That's a great question. There's a lot of, okay, first of all, there's two competing and maybe not mutually exclusive theories. One is that I think Mike Johnson reported that there's backstage heat, to use the industry term. Mike Johnson, yeah, PW
backstage
Insider.
Heat with who?
With on Braun Strowman.
Oh, I thought the New York Post broke that.
I knew you were going to say that. The New York Post is basically in the business now of like just doing wrestle blogs where you take somebody's material and you rewrite it as if you're like breaking a story. No, that's not true. Most blogs just like are better at sourcing. The New York Post just like wrote an article about this. It's like, hey, look at this story. And then it's like, oh, no, this is just telling you what Mike Johnson said.
Don't talk crap about my New York Post.
No, I know.
Whoever they steal their headlines from are the best.
They're good. They're good at writing headlines.
They are.
But yeah. So the idea is that he's, you know, they like him. But he's he doesn't always like show up on time. He's kind of like shows up late, leaves early.
Exactly.
And then, you know, is not always, doesn't have the best like etiquette. And we know there's all these weird etiquette stories that are going around the internet right now. But it's stuff about, you know, You have to be a locker room leader, but you can't say you're a locker room leader. And there's always, you know, there's the old handshake shit and all, you know, everything.
Yeah, what's the wrestler? Is it called the wrestler's handshake?
I don't even know.
And you just really delicately shake each other's hand? Is that
yes,
it?
Yes, you have to. You go up and shake everybody's hand when you arrive out of respect.
Yeah, but that, don't they do it like really soft or something?
Yes, because if you do it like
a tough
in
guy,
an aggro way, yeah, it looks like you're trying
each other's
to.
Hand, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There was a, who was it? On Something to Wrestle, they did that thing about Daniel Pewter, who
right.
was the old Tough Enough winner. They had like half their episode was about that, which, yep. By the way, I don't know why that wasn't two episodes because like
it's still 3 hours long. Yeah. Hardcore one was really good too.
The hardcore one was great. And it was like the second half.
It's hilarious.
Or was it the first half? No, it was the second half of the episode.
Yeah, second half.
But anyway, they talked about that in the Daniel Pewter one where like Big Show just went off on him one day randomly. He was like, are you flexing up on me or whatever, you know?
Right.
Just like when he came to say hi backstage, and I'm sure it was just whatever a guy.
Must be so uncomfortable.
Yeah, and who knows if Big Show really thought he was doing that or if Big Show was just trying to just scare him, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
we've
all done that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure everybody, at least everybody that's like lived in New York has had a thing where like somebody just tries to get into a fight, a random person on the street will try to get into a fight with you based on the fake, the false premise that you are trying to do something to them, you know?
They should have that in
great.
The commercial. Come to New York. They should have that on the commercial, like on the brochures. A random person will.
Or maybe it's not even New York. Why do I feel like maybe I'm just a scared person? This is also the thing that's happened in like middle school too, where like just some like scary guy in the hall would just be like, "Did you just look at me?" You know, and you're just like, you know, you didn't, and you know that he doesn't think that, but like there's no answer that you can give to that.
I just picture a little old lady on in the subway, like asking, going to ask you for directions, and you just screaming and fleeing,
you're flexing up
just
on me,
running away.
But yeah, there's a lot of that weird stuff. So you can't act like you're being, you act like you're trying to like dominate. You got to, you have to be sort of necessarily recessive. But all that's whatever.
Backstage
whatever.
Politics.
Backstage politics. I will say, and then there's the other rumor, and this I think came from Meltzer, is that his knees are shot and he's just not in the physical shape to be taking on a championship role. There's a lot of really funny stuff too about how they're like keeping him out of the ring because he's so, he has all these lingering injuries, but he's still like, was like running to the ring and beating up everybody last week. So I don't know if the point was to keep him out of ring work. I'm not sure how much it changes, but you know, he's a gigantic dude that weighs a whole lot. And man, that World's Strongest Man shit that he used to do is like
not good for your knees.
Not good for your knees.
A, you know, a car with a piano on top of it.
That's not good for any of your joints. It's really, really bad. And that, I mean, worse. I mean, wrestling is a whole different can of worms. The distance that Braun Strowman has come in the what two or three years since he started wrestling is so far. He's come so far so fast, and he really is a phenom. Not to take anything away from the Phenom, the Undertaker, but you know, I think that there's a certain level of like of unknown still with him. And one of those things is, and I wish guys had more time to heal up and to take time off and to keep their bodies right and everything like that. But one of the biggest things, you know, attributes when it comes to being a WWE superstar over the years that we've seen, and just a pro wrestler in general, is just like not getting hurt ever. Or the ability to work through pain and kind of mitigate the injuries that happen. And, you know, like we know, like Kevin Owens is out with getting like his knee scoped right now. But like we know from 15 years of experience that Kevin Owens is not going to be an injury, is not, or does not have a history of injury problems, you know?
Right.
And so you can kind of be a little bit more confident about that. And people have these long careers, you know, and Braun Strowman, you know.
Well, also with his size, I mean, just with history, those guys' knees usually go.
When we met him, that, I mean, that was one of the things. I don't know if we talked about this, but when we, but like, we, you know, I mean, one of the things that I came away with was like, it must hurt to be that big.
Yeah. One thing, I don't know if it was in the interview on the podcast, but do you remember when he was talking about the strongman, doing the strongman competitions? I think it was, he told us this, unless it was in an interview. Anyway, he said he was friends with the Mountain from Game of Thrones.
Yeah. They were. Yeah, I think he talked about that in the air.
Said, who would win in a fight? And he's like, I'd kick the crap out of the Mountain. And he was like, dead serious. And then he smiled. He's like, he doesn't fight. I was like, all right, that's awesome.
We saw him get get smacked around by Conor McGregor that one time on that like viral video. But that was just him clearly like knowing that if he breathed too hard, he would destroy McGregor. And there was a limit to what he could do.
I've never seen that video.
They like they met one time McGregor was just like, hey, let's slap box or whatever. And then, I mean, there's just a limit. It's like it's like if you were fighting like a really talented 8-year-old karate kid or something, you know, you'd be like they're like he would probably make you look really bad. But like if you just want like
got a hold of him.
Yeah. If you wanted to break his neck, you could. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you probably so it's sort of unfair.
But I don't, to be clear.
No. By the way, the Mountain is had like recurring ankle injuries that like that short circuited. Or no, that was before he even got into the strongman career. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page right now. But all those guys are just like the upkeep on being a world's strongest man is sort of bonkers. And their schedule is nothing compared to WWE.
Yeah. Comedian Brian Regan does a great bit about those world's strongest man competitions. You should check
really?
That out. Yeah. Hilarious.
It's a competition that I think is weird. You know, they're not lifting weights. It's like, all right, Kalkovic, we filled these grand pianos with molten lead. See how many can hurl in that third story window in 30 seconds. I'm at home. Put it down. They don't need to be up there. I'm sure of it. Your back's going to snap like a twig.
So what did you think of the match itself, though?
Like the opening thing with Baron Corbin?
Yeah,
which,
the
by the way,
that?
somebody on Reddit said this week, and this is like one of those incredibly obvious things that I just can't believe it never occurred to me, or if it occurred to me, I forgot it already. Yep. Is that Baron Corbin is doing with the storyline that must have been written for Jason Jordan before he got injured, and I was like, oh, that is 100% what's happening right now.
How so?
just feuding with Kurt Angle and like being his replacement GM and everything like that. Like they would have, this is where the Jason Jordan thing would have gone. Mm. And it would have been really fun if it were Jason Jordan. And Baron Corbin, by the way, is doing a great job. I mean, they've done a great, he's been a great sort of pseudo reclamation project or whatever so far with that in that role. But, again, if it didn't feel like it was so slapshot, it would have been a kind of an interesting turn that he, you know, cares very deeply about Brock Lesnar winning for whatever reason, or hates Braun Strowman, or you know, whatever that was. Mm-hmm. But the idea, I guess, is that he did that and that Brock was shocked by it. And then at that point, it's a fun short match story, you know, storytelling style. It's Braun basically, all he does is kick out. I mean, he's just fighting from underneath just to survive. And then eventually, as we've seen happen with Brock before, by the 18th F5, you've just had enough.
Those German suplexes he does hurts way worse than an F5.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. That suplex.
You're talking about in real life.
Yeah, that would kill, dude. I'm surprised those guys take like 13 of those. Your neck, back of your head, ooh.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing with the thing with the F5 is that the big dudes, Kane and Braun Strowman, who's dealing with effed up knees, take those differently than everybody else. For some reason, the big guys, just whatever it is about the physiology of the human structure or just coincidence, the big guys land on their knees. Like they kind of land on all fours when they take the move and then slide down. And then, and the little guys just sort of belly flop. I mean, just do a chest bump.
Either way, put the F5 in the bad finishing move Hall of Fame.
Listen, when you do the F5, the guy you're the 400-pound dude that you're doing it to is landing on his knees, and you have an idea that guy has messed up knees, then the F5 might be the most devastating move of all.
I guess, but you don't see Brock, you know, kicking his knees like UFC, getting him weak. That's his game plan. Yeah, so let's put that one in the Hall of Fame with Finn Balor's stupid thing off the top rope.
The coup de grace is great.
No, it's not.
You're a weak-minded human for not.
No, it's terrible.
That.
And the name is terrible. It's French. He's Irish. They should call it the Irish exit.
They should call it the Irish exit. I'm with you on that. The Irish goodbye is
the
better
Irish
one.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to DX versus the BOD. Brothers of Destruction.
The BOD. The less said about this, the better. Although it is sort of a hugely significant match. I mean, at least for the moment.
I thought it was very interesting. I could hear them talking to each other a lot.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, they were in a weird arena, I guess, and the sound, you know, you never know what the mics are going to pick up. And I don't know if they turned up the mics in the ring for that match or what, just to make it sound more impactful.
Well, what about the crowd chanting the whole time, but when you're looking at the crowd, like behind the ring, no one is chanting?
Maybe they just mic'd up a certain section of the
That audio was all piped in.
There did seem to be some weird stuff with the audio.
Yeah, this every time is awesome chance and everything else.
But also it seemed like every time they went to a crowd shot, they were going to like stock footage. Like it didn't even seem like it was like there's something about the video quality skipped and it didn't
Everyone's
seem
wearing
like
New York Knicks jerseys. It's like footage from an NBA commercial.
But yeah, it was a pretty good match for what they had to work with. It was just sort of, it struck me sort of like Undertaker Triple H, where like if it had been a little bit shorter and a little bit less of a main event, a little bit more purposeful, then it could have been better.
I enjoyed
it. It was fun to see Shawn back. It was sort of
he
amazing.
He was awesome.
Doesn't seem like he's really lost his step.
And since Triple H got hurt so early when he went over the turnbuckle spot there.
Yeah, like I think so. Back.
And then Shawn Michaels had to like kind of take over there. That's what I was reading.
Yeah, I mean, there was by the end of the match. I mean, Triple H's last pedigree.
Winning
pedigree.
Yeah, he couldn't even pick his arms up.
No, like Stone Cold's roll up of Owen Hart was better than that.
Jesus, that's funny.
Yeah.
So what about the funniest spot of the night that I liked was when Shawn Michaels knocked Kane's mask and wig off, which were apparently connected.
Well, if you didn't know those two things were connected. Then that's your
yeah, and the mayor of Knoxville was revealed to be Kane.
We always knew that that's what Kane looked like under the mask because he had his mask. He used to not wear the mask even in kayfabe, but we did think he grew his hair back out.
Exactly.
The weird thing was that Shawn punched his hair off, and then they just kind of kept they zoom in on Shawn Michaels to sort of
give
kill
Kane
time
right.
But then he didn't put it back on.
I know. And then maybe he was getting ready to not catch Shawn Michaels doing the moonsault off the top to the outside.
When people rank, yes, when people rank all-time great stiff working punches like Bret Hart and who else?
Big Boss Man.
You got to put Shawn Michaels up there now because he punched a dude's wig off.
Yeah. It's funny.
Do you think that Mark Henry is really jealous that somebody finally got their wig split in WWE and he didn't have anything to do with it?
Yeah. What did you think of the never before seen double Irish whip to each other and both hitting the guardrail between Kane and Triple H? Did you see that botch?
Yes. The whole thing was like, it was just a lot of, it was fine.
Yeah,
it
I know. I still liked it. Just seeing Shawn Michaels was great.
I know. It's just not fun to talk about because it's like, I don't know what, I mean, but Shawn really did carry the match. And the wild thing was that the he hit all of his big moves.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, for a guy of his age with that much time off, you're kind of like, I can't believe he can still do sweet chin music.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like something as simple as that, but he's still... Yeah, and he did the kip up. He did that crazy moonsault to the outside that you were just talking about.
That was
the wildest. He did even the elbow off the top seemed a little bit like, I can't believe he's doing this.
He's the greatest.
Awesome. He is. He is really good. He is really good. I wonder if someone like Shawn Michaels would have still retired if there were if he had been offered like two match a year deal, you know, at the time.
Right.
Or wrestle whenever you want deal.
Is there any other takeaways from Crown Jewel or Raw and SmackDown that you want to get into before we fire through a bunch of these Twitter questions?
Nah, I'm sure I'll remember something, but you can
just tie it in. This comes from Curtis Lewis, and it's, what Survivor Series team would you rather have? Robbinsdale High School alumni or West Texas State's?
For those that don't know, West Texas State is like has the greatest group of wrestling talent ever. In one university setting, their football team had, I think these were all football players, had Dusty Rhodes, Terry Funk, Dory Funk, Stan Hansen, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, Manny Fernandez, Bruiser Brody, Tito Santana, Tully Blanchard, Blackjack Mulligan, and then later Bobby Duncan Jr. That is just nuts.
It's crazy.
Just absolutely nuts. If you were booking anywhere south of the Mason-Dixon line prior to the year 1990, that was the greatest gold you could ever imagine having.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really incredible. And then Robbinsdale High School was the Mr. Perfect one, right? I mean, was up there. Was that up in Minnesota?
Yep. And it's Mr. Perfect, Ravishing Rick Rude, Road Warrior Hawk, Smash from Demolition, Barry Darso.
But only one Road Warrior? Only one went to that high school.
Yeah.
Okay. They trained at the same place. Okay.
Right. Smash from Demolition, Z-Man, Tom Zink, Nikita Koloff, John Nord, the Berserker, and Brady Boone. That's crazy too.
First of all, I love Battle Cat. As a kid, Battle Cat was one of my like favorite wrestlers. Part of it was that like he was mine. It's like, you know, I'm sure like all kids like their favorite band is a band that like came out when they were listening to music, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
So like Battle Cat was like kind of new, and I was just so into comic books. So I was like, yeah, this is my dude. He had a really, really cool like thing where he like got on his opponent's shoulders and then did like a small package roll up from there. It was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I he's not the highest value proposition on that
no,
team.
No,
listen, I'm gonna give it to West Texas State, but I will say without a shadow of a doubt that like 13-year-old me would have picked Robbinsdale High School in a second, and that's not just because like I was too young to understand or to like know who Dory Funk was, but or to understand who like, you know, that like Stan Hansen and Blackjack Mulligan or something like that were like, or, you know, or Tito, or Tully Blanchard was like a worthy wrestler. I love Tully Blanchard, but you know, he was the third tier in the Four Horsemen.
Right.
But just those guys were so electric. The Robbinsdale guys were just like made out of neon lights, you know, and that's what, and
yeah, Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, come on.
Yeah, and Rick Rude is one of those guys that like I loved booing as a kid and have so much more respect for as an adult. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think he's like a really, truly great wrestler. And there's a lot of that in this class. I mean, it's not saying they're all fluff, you know. I mean, obviously, Mr. Perfect, Hennig was always a high work rate, like acknowledged to be a great worker. And
he was
one of my, three tall favorites growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Zink was another guy who I just loved. at the time. And obviously Nikita Koloff was, I mean, just, he was a superhero. I mean, and especially in that NWA scene that Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair were unquestionably the top dudes, but Nikita just felt like he came out of a movie or something and joined the cast, or joined the crew. But, and obviously the Road Warriors, even though only Hawk is on here,
right,
are just, you know, my all-time favorite. I've said this before, my all-time favorite growing up, my all-time favorite Survivor Series team was the Ultimate Warrior, the Road Warriors, and Kerry Von Erich. So, young me goes Robbinsdale High School, but old broken down me is 100% West Texas State. It's a great question, though. If you had to pick four, I mean, if you had to pick teams of five, let's say teams of five, you definitely go Hennig, Rude,
Hawk.
Yeah, yeah.
Hawk was a beast, man. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I mean, he's maybe he brings some of that teamwork know-how. I'm just kidding. I remember his singles push. You're probably
yeah. Young, but they yeah, like, that he's not as good in a singles or something. Yeah.
No, but he got a run. So it's Hennig, Rude, Hawk, Koloff, and Tom Zenk. I'm giving it to Tom Zenk. No one can argue with me.
Over Smash? Over Battle Cat?
Mm-hmm. And then peak Tom Zenk was just incredible, man.
Him as far and Flying as, Brian. I remember them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on West Texas, you go Terry Funk, Dusty Rhodes, Bruiser Brody. Man, this is hard. This is going to make people mad.
DiBiase.
Stan Hansen for sure. And then DiBiase, Blackjack, Blanchard. Dory Funk needs to be on there. He was an all-time great, but I'm just taking him off because I didn't watch him wrestle.
He can
in real
be the manager.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can be the JJ Dillon role.
I'm going to give it to DiBiase.
Yeah, because he's it too.
He was so awesome in two different places. I mean,
I think Robbinsdale High School wins that match.
You think so?
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, when you actually like have to go down to five, then all of a sudden you have Perfect, Rude, and Hawk as your top three, and it hardly matters. But man, Dusty Rhodes, Terry Funk, and Bruiser Brody are pretty hard to beat, man.
Bruiser Brody and Hawk kind of like would cancel each other out, right? Bruiser Brody was big, isn't he?
I'd love to see Stan Hansen just like maul Hawk. Yeah.
Probably
yeah,
could
I'm
in
going
Japan.
West Texas State, but that's a great question. We could spend 14 hours talking.
I know,
about
that's
that.
A good one. Pick a random old WWE pay-per-view I should watch on the network. Orders Zach Brooks.
Can I say that I feel like I've answered this question before?
Oh, okay. We could skip it.
No. I'm going to answer it right now.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you're not being enough of a heel today.
Sorry.
You're really not living up to your reputation.
These questions suck.
Everybody talk. There's a lot of good ones in there. I highly recommend doing it randomly. That's what, like, the greatest thing about having a friend, like having like diehard wrestling friends, is that you just end up just throwing something on. And honestly, the one thing that the WWE network is missing is the roulette wheel. Like, you should just have a button that just like says, show me a pay per view.
Yeah. Like chat roulette.
Yeah. There's one, I don't know if it was wrestling. I think it was a WrestleMania weekend where I was rooming with the great Brian Dipperstein. And Dipperstein was just like every night, just like opened up or pulled out his iPad or his laptop and was just like, what are we watching? Like In Your House 3? You know, I was like, fine. And it was just fantastic. But I always say, if you want to watch, people always talk about WrestleMania 3, it was, you know, the greatest WrestleMania still. And WrestleMania 1 obviously is so significant. But WrestleMania 2 is just like a sneaky, amazing WrestleMania.
I think King Kong Bundy's birthday was yesterday, speaking of WrestleMania 2.
that was definitely a high point for him.
Yeah. Do you know Married with Children, Al Bundy? They got the name from King Kong Bundy.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's what they said on the radio when they announced his birthday.
It's on the radio.
Exactly.
WrestleMania 2, that has Macho Man versus George the Animal Steel, which is an incredible one from our lifetime.
That was heel Macho Man, right?
Yeah, Mr. T versus Roddy Piper in 10 rounds of boxing. It wasn't 10 rounds, but it was billed as 10 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
This was Pete Corporal Kirshner, who was almost, you know, who was one of those, if it might have been, or almost was, guys in WWE.
Mm-hmm. I remember him.
big tag team schmozzy thing. Ricky Steamboat versus Hercules Hernandez, just an all-time great.
Wasn't this also like in multiple
match?
It was in multiple cities too.
Yeah,
that was WrestleMania too, wasn't it? Wasn't it in L.A., Chicago, yes. and New York?
Yeah, something and there, like the that. Best thing is that there was also that Jake Roberts wrestled George Wells, and I still don't know who that is. So I mean, it was there was like actually just a jobber on the show.
Did Brutus Beefcake and Greg the Hammer Valentine win the titles at that one, or was that three?
No, the British Bulldogs were the
champs.
Yeah, they beat the British Bulldogs beat the Dream Team in that.
Ah, that's match. It. To win
that's
it,
Ozzy Osbourne came out with the British Bulldogs.
Nice. All right. Do you want to fire through a couple more of these? We only got a couple minutes left.
And Terry Funk is there too. You got to love Terry Funk. Dory Funk with Haas Funk. The Funk Brothers with Jimmy Hart over JYD and Tito. Go ahead. This is, fire through some more.
Okay. Who is your favorite masked wrestler? Asks Hamza.
Uvalde Slim, obviously.
Is that a real person?
That was one of Dusty Rhodes's, like, when he would, Dusty Rhodes in like every territory ever wrestled in got suspended. And would have to come back under a mask, and it would just be this whole thing where like everybody would know it was him, but the authority figures and referees would pretend they couldn't tell it was Dusty Rhodes, right. despite the fact that he was like that nobody looks like Dusty Rhodes, just in silhouette.
And he's got that huge growth on his stomach.
Uvalde Slim is like the greatest name.
What's the first name?
Just a great gimmick. Uvalde. It's like it's a little West Texas town, I think.
Yeah, because like Amarillo Slim and different names like that, they name him after the towns. That's good. That's cool. Good answer. I like Rey Mysterio. I never saw the giant machine or the machines or whatever. Hulk Hogan is one of the machines or American machine. Or
I mean, now we're going to like, this is like when you ask what your favorite tag team is and you say like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash and people get mad because you're not a purist. You're not a tag team purist. If you're just picking like if someone asks your favorite masked wrestler and you just pick a non-masked wrestler who was wearing a mask, are we offending the masked wrestler aficionados?
Kind of, yes, actually, now that I think about it.
I mean, when I was growing up, I was super into, like, Mio Mascaris. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, that was sort of his gimmick, is just to have kids like me be into him.
Mine was Kane until last Sunday when I found out his hair was
it's
fake.
All over.
When his hair was fake.
Never the same ever again. Who is that? I don't know. I mean, I feel like I should have an answer to this. I mean, I haven't loved any.
Jushin Thunder Liger was amazing when we were kids.
Yeah, but I think my problem was I wasn't super into those the Japanese guys or even the Mexican guys when they were like first popping up in the U.S. WCW. I was like a little bit too old. I think I was too young to appreciate them, but too old to be like seduced by their Rey Mysterio charms or whatever.
Mm.
And I know Rey Mysterio came with them or came after them, but I mean like
that's crazy. Rey Mysterio,
the appeal
amazing.
To kids. No, I mean like the fact that they just like the fact that they were just like the masks. It really appealed to the young. Whatever.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I just like
El Santo. El Santo, unfortunately, is not like I can't watch like his whole career, but he's the fucking best, man.
I don't know who that is.
He's the Mexican wrestler that was just like one of the greatest Mexican wrestlers of all time, if not the best. He was in like a million movies, like B movies that are just really, really fun to watch. If you haven't sought those out, please do. And he also just had the most tasteful, like when I become a masked wrestler, I will be wearing a mask much like El Santo's, which was just sort of like a dark silver with a light silver around the eyes and mouth and stuff. It's the very traditional, like platonic ideal of the luchador mask.
What about
the spoiler too? Don't forget the spoiler.
Oh right,
Don Jardine taught the Undertaker everything he knows. He was really good.
What about when that Survivor Series when Jerry Lawler had like the masked guys, but like Shawn Michaels had to fight for him or something? Do you remember that?
It was really dumb.
The Masked Knights.
I'm not even going
to... Don't even call into it? Okay.
Yeah.
I think one was Greg Valentine, from what I remember.
It is. One was indeed Greg
Valentine. Oh, I think one was Terry Funk, or did he quit? He refused to do it, something like that.
I think he refused to do it? Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, no. I think they wanted them to rip the mask off, and he was like, what the hell? I'm not doing that. All right, let's go to another question.
Oh, by the way, before we get off of that question, this show, as everyone listening to it knows, doesn't give enough credit to people who are wrestling outside of WWE very often, but this is a good opportunity to say, to just add my voice to the chorus saying that like Phoenix and Pentagon are two of like the best wrestlers in the world and deserve everything they get. And if WWE ruins them, that might be the worst thing they could ever do.
I'm going to edit that.
If they add them to members of Lucha House Party, it will that's a war crime. Not that they have not signed, but they, you know, there's been rumors. Anyway, go ahead.
So here's a great question from Natish Venkatesh. Can we do a top five scariest wrestlers in jeans ranking? It's long overdue.
Scary meaning like they look bad, or like they look absolutely like a guy in street clothes. This wrestler is scary.
Hold on. Let me tweet back to him and we'll just wait around for his response.
What do you want the question to be?
I guess toughest looking.
Scariest, because I said that like, well, I mean, I always say like Samoa Joe didn't look great in his jeans the other day, but he's like the scariest real life wrestler.
Right.
In real life, he look in jeans and a t-shirt. He is.
But who wrestles in jeans? Dean Ambrose,
Elias.
I guess like the outsiders used to come out in jeans, but they wouldn't wrestle in jeans. I don't. This question's kind of vague.
John Cena,
but it could be fun.
Jean shorts. The all time. If everybody had, didn't Sid have that for a while?
Jeans.
I feel like I feel like Sid Vicious had just like jeans and tape fists. Maybe I'm just remembering a War Games match, but I feel like he had a tape fists and jeans period.
And the body glove elbow pad.
Yes, exactly.
Was he sponsored by that? I always remember it was like body glove.
I think he just thought they were really cool.
Yeah, they were.
The scariest guy. I'll just I'll make this question about guys just like you see them in jeans.
Yeah.
Sure. Are they wearing shirts?
I don't know. Yeah.
All right. The all-time scariest guys in just regular street clothes.
Just jeans.
Jeans, no shirt.
It says just jeans, so yeah, it doesn't say shirt. Just jeans.
Well, that's a whole different
thing.
I have
my answer.
Now I'm thinking of like Jeff Jarrett in like that in his like beefcake poster when I was a little kid, where he was like wearing jeans and there was like a waterfall coming down on him.
I'll go with Rikishi.
Oh yeah, Rikishi would be really scary.
Bastion Booger.
Someone posted a picture on Reddit, I think today, of Cactus Jack, aka Mick Foley, and Abdul the Butcher just walking down the street in San Francisco in their street clothes. I don't think either of them were wearing jeans, but they both just look like larger than life characters, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
I think every wrestler should wear like you have like a public look. You know, just like you know, the Ric Flair wearing the suits or whatever.
Right.
Although, yeah,
Cactus Jack always wears the red and black flannel and the sweatpants, right?
In this case, he seems to be wearing black pants that very well may be sweatpants, a tucked in white t-shirt, and a cowhide vest.
I got to see that. You should tweet it. I'll tweet it from the Masked Man account.
It's pretty awesome. If we figure out, I would like to figure out who the scariest wrestlers in jeans are, but I don't even know what the criteria is. I mean, there's, you know, Undertaker would be pretty scary in general, no matter what he's wearing. But yeah, there's I should go through. We'll do this for next week. Figure out what that guy meant. But specifically, like, I will put together my rankings of like most intimidating in real life.
Okay.
We talk about it a lot on the show, but some of them will surprise you. No matter what he's wearing, Brock Lesnar is up there. Randy Orton, Jesus Christ. Randy Orton is scary as hell.
Because he's got like those Ed Hardy jeans with like the designs and bedazzled on him.
No, he's one of those, he's like actually a giant. I mean, Randy Orton is like, I've said this on shows before, but Randy Orton is like what I assume like running into J.J. Watt or something must be like. I mean, he's just enormous. And yeah, he's scary. And Samoa Joe is right up there. Obviously not that tall, but whatever.
We got time for one more question, which is actually two questions here. This comes from Colin Steele. What's the WrestleMania 35 main event you want? And what's the WrestleMania 35 main event you think we'll get?
This is a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard because I don't know what's happening with Brock Lesnar. So I don't really know. My guess, if I had to pick right now, this is a multi-tiered question. Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte Flair is probably going to be one of the top two matches on that show. And if we want to get into like a philosophical debate over whether or not that should be, if it does happen, that should be the main event, That's really interesting. But I'm going to set that aside because I assume the dude's asking about the Universal Championship match, which is always the big match, and not like, what if Undertaker versus Aleister Black goes on last or something? And it's really hard, but if you want me to just pick what the Raw main event basically is.
Sometime today, please.
No, I'm going to drag this out as long as I can.
I can tell.
I'm just going to go safe. I mean, I think the safe bet is like Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins for the Universal title.
Hmm.
Probably that's not enough star power to go on last, though. So if you want to say like if it's the Universal title match, it's also the main event, then maybe it's like Drew McIntyre versus Batista for the Universal title. That's my outside the box answer. Or maybe that's just really inside the box.
So that's what you think we're going to get. What do you want?
I don't know. I honestly get seduced by these storylines and stuff. But if it weren't happening at Survivor Series, I would say Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey. I mean, that's the match I'm most interested in seeing that could really headline a WrestleMania, I would sort of. But, you know, I'm always up for Undertaker versus Aleister Black. I didn't just say that for no reason at all. There's no way that's going to happen. WrestleMania 36 is the one I'm really excited about because there is some... The generation that's coming up in NXT now is just pure fire, and it's going to be really interesting to see how quickly some of those guys can climb up the rankings.
WrestleMania 36 is the one you're interested in?
Yeah.
It's 2020?
Yes.
Oh, what the hell?
I have more excitement. I have more like, I'm more amped up about things that could possibly happen in that one. But anyway, I'm going to say, I mean, listen, McIntyre Rollins could be the best WrestleMania main event in forever. Those guys can go like crazy. And if they can get them over like crazy, then that's huge. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I think that they're going to have a really interesting time figuring out what that's going to be. It'll probably be a celebrity in that match, whether it's Batista or somebody else. I don't know if Triple H has enough time to recover to take that spot. So then what do you do? The Rock versus John Cena again?
Great.
No. John Cena versus Drew McIntyre for the Universal title.
Okay.
Book it.
It's almost time for WrestleMania 36 at this point. That answer is so long.
Can I say, by the way, Drew McIntyre, I thought the ending of Raw was fantastic. There was a lot of weird... People were weirdly mad about it. I thought him beating up Kurt Angle the way he did was just like really compelling, and I'm very into it. All right, we got to get out of here. Thank you guys for listening. Sorry we didn't have Dan St. Germain. He's dead to me. If you want to be my new co-host, no, tweet at Masked Man Show an audio clip of you giving your hottest take and why you should be the new co-host of the Masked Man Show. New York City residents get a definite advantage.
I don't like this.
No, maybe we'll just open it up. I'll do a world tour and just start testing out co-hosts all around. When my new child is born, I'll just be the most deadbeat dad of all time.
The Macho Man was trying to pick his manager.
If you're still listening to this podcast and you think you should be my new co-host, you have to beat Dan St. Germain in a fight, but that is probably doable. Tweet at Masked Man Show your qualifications. And I want your spiciest wrestling take, 30 seconds or less. On audio or video. That's a serious request. Thank you guys for listening. Apologies, as always, to Dean Ambrose. We'll see you back here next week, humanoid.
We are desperately out of time. The tape machines are rolling. We'll see you next week on the Masked Man Show.